Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to session 24, how a parish's digital presence enhances stewardship. I'm Michael Murphy. I'm the executive director of ICSC, and I'm the perfect person to facilitate this because I am such a Neanderthal when it comes to digital technology, really slow on the upkeep. So what I have here is four wonderful folks who do know their craft and can help us understand how to better enhance our digital technology for getting people engaged and to evangelize. This is the new roads of St. Paul, wouldn't you think? Let's start with a prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. Together, loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry, and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen.
In the name of the Father,
about, I guess it's been about six or seven years ago, I was in the company of a bishop who was telling this story of asking a high school religion class to put together something for him that revealed their faith and how what their faith meant to them. And he said he thought he was going to get some kind of booklet, maybe a collage of different things, a collection, a compilation of things in a booklet form. And he said what he got was a whole digital array, whether it was in Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, of prayers and testimonies. And young people interviewing others about their faith. And he said he admitted that he was a little frustrated at the beginning because he was not into digital technology, and he came to realize that this was the way to evangelize now, that this was the way to engage people, this was the way to reach out in a way that he never knew. He said it was beyond his consciousness that he could do that. And as you know better than I do, being able to evangelize technology, and especially as we engage those who are parishioners, those who are lapsed and we're trying to bring back, especially post-pandemic, and those who do not profess a faith. This is so important. So what we want to do today is have an interaction with you on what we are experiencing and how our digital footprint can even be better. So I have here four people today who I really depend on to help us. To my right is Deacon John Rogers, Vice President of Parish Services at the Pringer Group. And next to him is Leslie Rodriguez, who is the president of Home Impact Media. To the left of me, the far left of me, is Matt Adams from OSB. Matt is the he's a senior stewardship consultant at OSB there. And someone who works right into the trenches in parishes is Lindsay Sartorio, who is a pastoral associate for faith formation and evangelization at the Archbishop Murphy Award recipient, St. Pius X Parish in Greensboro, North Carolina. So thank all four of you for being here with us. First of all, I'd like to to get the four of them just to tell a little bit about themselves and what interests them in the area of evangelizing through digital technology. And let me start with Deacon John.
Sure. So, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Appreciate everybody being here. I love pool rooms, so, and I'm a little over-caffeinated. So, my boss is sitting in the back, and he made me take the booth in the first shift this morning. So.
Can you hear him in the back?
We all good? Okay.
He's like, right. I have a little trouble in
yeah,
the back.
Yeah. That's good. Okay, I'll do my best. So I'm the Vice President of Parish Services at Pringer Solutions Group. I'm the day-to-day director of a software solution that's called Catholic Social Media. I've been doing that for about the last 6 years. We'll see if that's on. Awesome. Wonderful. So what we really try to do or strive to do is based on a study that our parent organization did in 2018 with the folks at eCatholic, where we surveyed several hundred U.S. parishes on a whole host of topics, but found out at that time in our data set that there was this really strong connection between the parishes that were posting on Facebook 7 days a week and the parishes that were separately reporting that their household giving was 44 percentage points healthier than parishes that were posting less often. At that time, Catholic social media didn't exist, so we began to build a software solution to help parishes in getting good, solid, unbranded Catholic content that was from the heart of the church, that didn't have an agenda to it, that had no one else's copyright logo on it, that felt like it was coming out of the parish. And so since then, we've had about 4,000 U.S. parishes use our service in some way, shape, or form. And the best part is all that data is available at our fingertips. And so we use that to try to help drive both evangelization efforts and stewardship efforts at the parishes and the dioceses that we serve. It's the best job in the world. So that's just a little thumbnail about me. So shall I pass to the side? Yeah. We'll keep going.
Hi, I'm Leslie Rodriguez. I'm the co-founder and owner of Impact House Media. Pretty much all I do is with digital footprints. My specialty has really been in video. I'm a director and producer of all the videos for the clients we have, mainly on the diocesan level for appeals and campaigns, Catholic school galas, all that. But we offer a whole online marketing suite. But from the very beginning, my very first project was actually with the Vatican. It was for the Dicastery of Evangelization for the Year of Mercy. We made a video for them, their official Year of Mercy video. And since then, as the funny thing about digital communications is it changes so rapidly. So what it looked like 7-8 years ago when I first started is very different now. And it's such a game of being able to repackage your same message in a way that people are communicating now. You know, it might all be digital, it might all be technology, but how it was done many years ago is probably not how it's being packaged now. So, I've had the pleasure of working with many large Catholic institutions all the way down to parishes and individual small Catholic schools, all within this realm. So, yeah.
Thanks, Leslie. Maybe, let me go over here to Matt.
Thanks, Michael. I'm Matt Adams with our Sunday Visitor. I'm kind of a self-taught geek, not afraid to say that. Love technology. I've built hundreds of websites for different organizations and being a board member, trying to see how that engagement can bridge the gap between the print world, the digital world, how we can modify that and know, you know, how people want to be communicated to. Where are they and how does your data set help you leverage each one of those channels to the way that makes sense? And me being frugal or cheap, as my wife says, I want to make sure every dollar makes sense, right? Even a labor hour dollar means something because our staff time perishes. How many are in here? Who's overstaffed? Okay. There you go. That's the answer, right? We got to be efficient in what we do. I spent 20 years in the tech business. God walked me into this company called Our Sunday Visitor. It's basically a print and mail house, and we needed to be more efficient. How can we help bring new tools and new partnerships to the Catholic Church in everything we do? So that's kind of our thing and why I want to be here to help talk to you and see if I can give you any ideas about where you can go.
Lindsay, from the parish perspective.
So I actually started out as a high school teacher. My background is in English and history and theology and not in working for a parish or anything social media or communications related. But I was hired at the parish to do faith formation as a DRE essentially. And then our pastor, Monsignor Marcaccio, who wrote the prayer that's in your book, he kind of reorganized the parish staff into these four buckets of music and liturgy, formation and evangelization, finance and admin, and then parish and community life. And he said, you're kind of a good wordsmith, and I'm going to throw communications under evangelization. And that's kind of how I landed the role at my parish of doing a lot of our communication stuff. And so I've taught myself a lot of what I know and just kind of apply it as needed and hit the ground running and had to drag some people kicking and screaming into the digital world that were kind of resistant. But, you know, with change comes growth and opportunity. And sometimes that is, you know, change is hard for people. So we've kind of just been in this process for the past 7-8 years of shifting more that way. And it's all been working out brilliantly. So
thank you, Lindsay. So now let's start getting our intellectual engines running a little bit. And I want to ask our panel, what just fundamental experience they've had with parishes that have attempted to have their digital presence inform stewardship or evangelization in their parish?
So in terms of fundamentals, I think it all just comes down to sort of the time that is involved in sort of doing this well, as we all know, right? Most of the parishes that our service serves, the digital communications presence is run by a parish secretary. That's, as we all know, the most common thing. Or it's somebody for whom social media is somewhere on a list of like other duties as assigned, and it's way the heck down there. And that's okay. So it's really time, right? Which is, if fundamentally a lay employee at a parish or a volunteer at a parish is a minister, and they want to minister to souls, how do we make sure they have as much time in their schedule ministering to souls? You know, we do not want anyone to be sort of lashed to, you know, a computer in the back of the parish office that's got Photoshop or Canva up for like 60 hours a week. That's just not real life. And so it's really about finding the efficiencies in some of this, I have found, so that people can go back to the process of ministering, right? And say, and not to look at a person and say, oh, I have to go do this tech thing, so I can't be with people right now, but to actually reverse that in some way. So I would say fundamentally it's about using the digital as the servant of in-person ministry. Now, it's really easy coming from a deacon to use the word servant and like wave it around, but it is really true that the end goal is for in-person interaction between two people in the real world where God means us to be, but the digital presence is the servant of that. And it is in this way that, just like people would use the digital realm to figure out, do I want to spend $20 to go to this movie, or do I want to spend $100 to go on this date night with my spouse, right? Is it worth it? You use all those digital tools to kind of ask that question first. People are also using digital tools to say, is it worth it to go to this parish down the road? If I look them up, is their social presence engaging? Are there people having conversations in the comments? Is it alive? Is it even open in some way, shape, or form? And so just using the digital to kind of set that table, so that people then feel comfortable moving from the digital into, I am going to that event, I am darkening the doors of that church. But the two work together. We can't see them as fragmented, and that's a lot of what our day-to-day work is when it comes to these things. I will pass. Yes, Mike. Yep, I will pass to my right.
Yeah, I would say very practically what my experience has been has really been focused on taking the fear away of utilizing video on digital platforms for people, because obviously you're not going to always be able to have a professional video production company make video for you, nor is that necessary when we're talking about social media platforms. So it's very practically, how can you make your stuff look professional, given that it is probably a parish secretary managing these things who might not have any video experience or social media experience. So I really try and honing in on, how can you have professional quality audio? How can you have a simple background that makes it look like you're not like domineering and stuff? You know, like good framing, good lighting, and good audio are really key for high quality professional social media, or honestly on your website too, not necessarily social media, but digital presence. So yeah, and those are really easy and usually free or very low cost, which is always a plus.
Thanks, Leslie. Let me go to Lindsay this time.
Thank you. So digital presence, informing evangelization and stewardship. I think for us, it's about three things. Visibility. So our parishioners and the things that they're doing are visible to others. We have cute kids. We have, you know, cool young adults, and they're doing great things. And I think they're visible to other parishioners, but also to the community. And people can see what their money is doing. Like, people who are giving and who are generous to us can see, you know, us doing things for our urban ministry, or they can see the kids at Vacation Bible School and how, you know, the funds are being spent on our children. And so that's a beautiful thing. It's informative. It's another means of connecting with people and letting them know what's going on, and giving them kind of a way to interact that way. And it's a broader reach, because you mail things and it might end up in the junk mail, or you're only reaching certain, you know, our mailings go out to our households, but social media, it's kind of unlimited in the reach that it can get to. The more people that follow our page or the people that subscribe to our newsletter, that goes well beyond just our households. And so it just kind of has a broader reach.
Matt? Yeah, so when, can I just yell like this? Is that okay? Have y'all heard me good?
That's my coach coming out in it. 15 years of yelling at the, you know, junior high kids helps out. So, you know, as Leslie said, you know, good tools. Think about audio is probably my most frustrating thing I see online when you're engaging. A $35 dual microphone set that you plug into your phone to capture not only this, right? We're all content creators now. And as you mentioned, mom, grandma, they're all taking video. How do you get that into to enable the story? Because we need to be good storytellers at the end of the day. Little things like this have come a long way. You know, there are some $700 mics that definitely are great, but these little things will do the job. If you're just out at an event and you can plug it in here and put a microphone on two people and say, tell me a little bit about why you're here today. Right? I always ask our church secretaries, do you know what a content creator is? And they're like, yeah, I know what it is. They get paid stupid money to make stupid videos, right? But you're a content creator sitting there at that desk creating the bulletin, posting it on Facebook, getting it up on your website. That bulletin can be cut up to tell the story of, thank you for supporting the church. Because of you, here's what we're doing. And because of you, here's what's possible next. So I kind of use that mantra in all of my coaching to help priests and office staff understand, how do we enable that digitally, in print, to understand the generational differences in our parishes, right? Younger folks that don't know what an 8-track or a corded phone are that are in here, right? I'm old enough at 51 to understand I was pre-internet, and now we're trying to figure that dance out. How do we get that to happen? Video is key, as you said. Everybody's kind of afraid of it, but there's a lot of folks that can sit there and record themselves. Short message is really meaningful, right? I've had priests say, when I put a video at the top of my flock note, I get a 30 to 40% better open rate than when I don't. So don't be afraid to encourage leaders to give themselves that humility to record themselves and embed that into your communication, whether it's an email, a text, whatever. Use those tools, because that storytelling is going to go a long way to telling your donors that they're appreciated, that your money's being well spent, it's being invested in the future of our church, especially in school communities when you've got that first school engagement, you've got drive-by parents that drop kids off and go away and forget to participate in the faith during the week. Right? Not their faith is still 1 hour on Saturday or Sunday while the kids are there. During the weeks, we got to enable and kind of leverage that gap and bring that together. The digital does it. They can consume the media in podcast form, short video, you know, 3-minute videos, about 20-minute rambling videos, small town hall events. Both, right? We all got good at virtual town hall events during COVID. How many of you still do anything like that? Right? We've kind of walked away from actually a pretty good thing that COVID brought out, is bringing people together to create that conversation moment and see where it goes. Because people do want to be engaged. If you invite them to those things more often, I think we'll be in good shape.
Thank you, Matt. Yep. I'm going to ask them two more questions, and then I'd like to come to you and ask you to talk about your hot topics, to ask what's really bugging you, what you think should be pushing the envelope. and that kind of thing. So be thinking about that. So my next question is, what kind of content are folks receiving in the peers? What are they responding to? Leslie, can you start? What kind of content are they responding to, receptive to?
Yeah, I would say stories, and I know that's probably been thrown around a lot of, like, be good storytellers, but what does that actually mean? For an example, say you're at a Catholic school, and you want to talk about how great the teachers are at your school. Instead of just posting a picture of a teacher and saying, like, we love our teachers, we have a great student-to-teacher ratio, have a picture of a student and a teacher and say, ask the student a story of when a teacher, like, changed their life, and post that personal testimony. And then you can always put a bullet at the end saying, we have great teachers here, you know, but you lead with the story because it pulls at their heart, and you have more engagement, because it pulls at the heartstrings for that. And it's just follow the narrative arc. You have your hero, which would be maybe the student. There's a problem. Maybe they were really struggling in a class. They have their guide, which is the teacher who spent extra time with them outside of school to make sure they really got the concept. And then you have their victory at the end, which they ended up getting their first A in that class. So you have the narrative arc that you can follow for any story that helps engage people in the life of what you're doing, as opposed to just reading numbers and stats of what you're doing.
Thank you. Deacon?
For me, I think it's three things that I see that are really working. The most important that we've seen over the course of the last few years has been content that bridges the gap between the secular life that people are living and the life of faith. So, you know, this is very simple when we're talking about, say, like the memorial of September 11th or something like that. That's not that hard of a reach for anyone to sort of say, okay, I'm going to put up a prayer about this period and maybe some people will start to engage. But it also means actually engaging with some of the, you know, sort of silly things. You know, those moments where, you know, National Eat a Pizza Day is on a Friday and there's an opportunity to kind of talk about giving up of meat on Fridays, right? Because it's like, okay, we've got this thing. People are kind of talking about it. It's sort of floating around over social. And there's this Catholic aspect to this that is very natural, but we don't often think about. And we find that parishioners love this because it helps them pull it all together. You know, between like the hot water heater blowing up and, you know, having to change the, you know, the furnace filters, at least in the upper Midwest, and do all those sorts of things. You know, this is where kind of it comes together with the life of faith in some way. So that's been a huge one. I would also say that sort of those aspects of the faith that people don't know about that they're actually hungry for. So one of our smallest diocesan clients, the Diocese of Great Falls Billings, they do Why Do We Do That Wednesdays, which is just a really fun way to kind of instruct people in the faith in a way that doesn't make them feel like, oh, I should have known that, you know, but it's really just kind of that, oh, why do we? Okay, this, all right, I have a little bite-sized answer I can bring somewhere with me. And the third one is those very local moments that allow people to bring their own experience into things. So we have a parish client in Illinois in the Diocese of Joliet, where they've got some highly skilled people who are just highly skilled at going around their campus, taking like one little cell phone shot from a little corner of the church and being like, this is Agnes's, you know, Secretary Agnes's favorite place to pray. Like, have you, and then people will just instantly like, oh my God, that's my favorite. Like, I love the way the light comes through at the 11 a.m. mass. Like, that's my, it's just, boom, we're just there, right? But it's sort of those moments that people, can connect to instinctively, but sort of didn't know that was part of the life of faith for them. And so those are all really fun ways to just kind of watch the engagement increase, in a community.
Thank you, Deacon. Lindsay?
So one of our favorite things that we ever did on social media, we actually did it during COVID because we were trying to figure out ways that we could still kind of stay connected with our parishioners. Our pastor's dog was somewhat of a mascot at the parish. He had a French bulldog named Tater. And so we did a whole week of staff pets. And it was just what we were doing at home and what were our pets doing at home during COVID. And we kind of led up to Tater and Tater's life and how he gets to spend time with Monsignor. And, again, like it's the stories and it's the personal things that you get engagement with. positive and negative, I will say that. And so the negative engagement is sometimes, you know, that's a whole other session, I'm sure. People who, yes, they engage and they have great positive comments, but then there's like, you know, 1 in 100 that you'll get that's snarky or something that you have to kind of then manage. Videos of our pastor giving messages, like you mentioned, like those are always really big things. But the length of time of those, I think, is important. And that's something where if you learn about kind of looking at the data on those things, like what's the drop-off rate? You know, like after 4 minutes, you'll see the viewership go from here, like, and it'll plummet. So in a 15-minute video, they're watching a few minutes and then they're stopping. So kind of being attentive to the timing of those. And then events are probably the third thing that we get the most comments or clicks and things like that, because again, those are being shared with not just our parishioners but community as well. We have a big festival coming up, and so the more, you know, things we put out about our festival, the more it increases like people's anticipation of the events and stuff like that.
Matt?
Yeah, go ahead. So I like to have, you know, that other people.
Oh, sorry.
So, you know, I like to call them one-cup conversations, as she mentioned. There is a short attention span society we live in today. We really need to be focused on that when we're producing content, if it's video or audio. Give it to them in a mechanism, in a way to absorb that quickly, or break it down. As you said, there may be 15 minutes of good content. Find a way to break that up. There's a lot of great AI tools out there now that will help you find the most viral clips in a 30-minute, you know, present. You've been a clip, you know, and so you could use that technology to help chop it up, send it out there, and say, to hear more, let them click on the full-length video, but that gets the engagement going, feeds the algorithm, you know, allows you to be there. So those one-cup conversations could be just a couple people sitting down and talking. Maybe it is about the church budget. It could be a boring topic. It could be father and a finance president. Just sitting down and spending 5 or 10 minutes talking about, here's how we're investing, here's how we're growing, here's actually what we need, and here's my pastor's wish list for the next year. Those are really powerful, because when you can make the personality of your priest come through as a leader and kind of humanize that, we see very good attention and, you know, on social events. Think about your real estate. You know, some of the biggest avenues to search for what's going on in this town. That's one of the biggest searches on YouTube. It's not on social, on the other side. It is, but YouTube is where people want to consume that. They want to be talked to. They don't want to have to read stuff. So really think about how you can leverage the video. You know, it's uncomfortable for a lot of people. I'm actually pretty shy, but I don't mind doing this. So, but think about that. That's one of the great things we've had. Those town halls. How many of you do kind of an annual State of the Parish report or something? Those are great conversation starters. If you're not doing that, send it to your top 100 or 200 donors to make sure they're really appreciated, and then make sure it's available on all those platforms and talked about. You know, what would you like next? How many of you have done, say, a draft town hall budget meeting? Nobody wants to talk about the budget, right? But that's a great opportunity for input from the community about where they think the church needs to go, and start that conversation, start that dialogue. And then you can understand, is our budget online or not? Are we spending in the right areas that people we have that affinity for? Or we don't. You may not know that at all, and that's okay. That's a scary, scary place. But it is conversation, and it helps deliver that content in a way that makes sense.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. I'm going to defer that fourth question. And I want to go ahead and ask for your questions or comments or experiences. Anybody brave enough to start?
Say your name and where you're from.
I'm Clara from Orlando, the Catholic Foundation. You were talking about stories. What are your tips for finding stories? And, like, because that's my biggest issue, is just finding stories to tell.
Finding stories. Anybody want to start?
So for us, we do all of our videos basically narrative storytelling.
And so we do a lot of that. I think asking for references from pastors is helpful, or the people who are day-to-day in the parish. You yourselves, if you're in parishes, I'm sure you know people who have good stories. And just asking good questions can get you very far. And just being inquisitive about their life or their experience. If you know what kind of content you want, like say you want a testimony about, someone's kid's experience at like vacation Bible school or something. If you have like the message that you know you want to try and get across, it helps kind of guide what you're looking for, or who you're looking for to answer those questions. And don't be afraid to not use a story. I think I've run into this professionally with clients where they say, I really want to use this person. Like I really want this person for whatever reason. Maybe they're the only person being ordained that year or something. And I talk to them, and some people just aren't good storytellers, or they don't think they have a story to tell, and that's okay. You can just say like, hey, thanks for that great conversation, and just move on to like talking to the next person. But I find asking the people who have boots on the ground in the parish usually know the people who have good stories, and then they can just connect you. I know like, you also don't want to step on toes by someone saying like, oh, they want to use your story for something, and then you feel pressured to use it in some capacity. You could always just say like, yeah, like I'm wanting to hear stories at parishes to see, you know, what's really working or what's not. So that way if you don't end up using their story, you're not offending anyone, because I know that's a real thing. But yeah, ask the people with the boots on the ground and just ask good questions and have like an extended conversation, to allow people the opportunity to share more of what's on their heart. Because I think at first sometimes people are, they're nervous or they're humble. And you need to show genuine interest in who they are and what they're doing for them to open up and give kind of their deeper story to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Deacon?
Just real briefly, I think our converts every year present a natural storytelling element, how it is that they have made this decision to give their life to Jesus. We had one in my own parish this last year, great big carpenter. His daughter started going to kindergarten. She came home. She started preparing, you know, for reconciliation in the next year, and, you know, in receiving First Communion in 2 years, and he just came into the faith, right? And part of his story that was told at the parish was just the fact that he was so large, we actually had to pull water out of the baptismal font to figure out when we immersed him. We wanted to make sure we didn't overflow the entire church during the vigil. But it was this great kind of like visual, right? Like everybody knows this guy. He's huge. But it was just an instant sort of, okay, we want to be gentle with this, right? He's a new convert, but we do want to honestly hear his story. And that just breaks, I think, into broader testimonials. If you're in the habit of giving testimonials in your parish at the beginning of every meeting, at the beginning of every gathering, people talking about how they've given their life to Christ, those are natural, I think, sort of story elements. And then the physical items as well. So the physical items around the parish, my current parish that I'm assigned to, one of the main ciboria we use at Mass, was given to the parish at the 9th National Eucharistic Congress, back in the 1942 in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where I'm from. Natural storytelling point, right? There's a little donor engravement, but those sorts of stories that people would not be able to hear any other way. They're like in the sacristy somewhere, or like they're at the bottom of this statue that everybody knows. Those can be sort of pulled into as well in sort of like a throwback Thursday sort of way.
Thanks, Deacon. If I could share just a brief anecdote. In our parish, our stewardship commission had, in their strategic planning for the year, wanted to put stewardship in people's minds a little bit better. And they made a list of people, 26 people, to go through 26 weeks of the year, and to publish what they do in the bulletin and on Facebook. So you've got a sacristan who's 80 years old, and she does many, many things on a daily basis for the parish. There's the young man who is a maintenance worker, very involved in the community, English speaking and Spanish speaking. They would go back and forth in each week's bulletin and just give a little profile of that person. person and show how that person was being a good steward of the parish. That took off. People got interested in the printed bulletin. People wanted more copies, and they would call in or email the pastor and say, "What about this person? What about that person?" So it got them a whole lot more engaged when they did that.
Honestly, I was going to say RCIA, our RCIA people, they've had some, we had this past year a former Protestant minister who came through our program and an Eastern European woman that I think she knew more than our pastor about faith stuff. It was incredible. Ministry leaders, and our parish council's one that sometimes, like, we know we have a parish council, but you don't always know who those people are, and it's nice to put faces with names sometimes. So those are good groups, I guess, to kind of share their stories and why they're involved.
How about, that was a content question. Any other questions? Yes.
Suzanne from a parish in the Diocese of Columbus, Ohio. So we fortunately have a pastor who loves to do videos instead of write, which is great, and he has a little bit of a following during COVID. He did a Wednesday message, and it was important for people to see his face when we couldn't be in the parishes, and so that has continued. The question is more about the algorithms and all of that stuff on all the platforms of social media. How do you conquer that where we could try and great. He at our parish picnic, he got up and sang a little snippet of A Mustang Sally. And the best part of the video that someone captured is he had a baseball cap on and he took his hat off and put it on backwards and he's in his clerics and he has great voice and he sang. It was phenomenally hit the social media. And then we do his Wednesday message and we go right back down. So what are tips or tricks or?
Question,
anybody?
Pass on over. Pass on over. So, yeah. Yes, yes, yeah. So we all know this is changing all the time, right? So there's a way in which the moment you try to chase the algorithm, you're going to kind of lose it. And so what we found over time, what works is really put up content that your own followers are going to comment upon. That is probably the number one thing that you can do. And the reason for that, and I'm going to speak to Facebook because of all the social media platforms, Facebook is the one that's still used by basically 100% of parishes. And it is the one that's the most geographically based, right? So a parish, I think rightfully, should really have no ministerial interest in reaching someone halfway across the world because you're called to be the people of God in a particular location, right? We all know this from our canon law classes, right? Everybody nodding. Okay, great. So there's this thing about how do I serve the people who I can actually reach, right? Who will come to the parish in person, God willing, someday. And that comment is the most important thing because the moment a parishioner follower leaves the comment, they get moved into a category in the algorithm called highly engaged followers, right? It's not something you can look up directly, but in our conversations with various, we know this is the case. And after that, they will see parish content sorted higher up in their social media feed for the next 12 months. So you need one comment for 12 months of a highly engaged follower, right? Every single time that happens, you now have more chances for them to hit the share button and for it to get out among their friends. And the beautiful thing about Facebook and parishioners is that since Facebook sorts what is shared partially by geography, if you can get to your parishioners who have really thick Facebook connections, so in my parish, that's Terry the electrician, right? Because he's like, doesn't have a website, right? It's all like, you know, Emily's List and Angie's List, sorry, and Better Business Bureau and Facebook recommendations, right? So when Terry, as a highly engaged parishioner, decides to start commenting on parish items, and then hitting the share button from time to time, basically all of his clients who are all within the parish boundaries see it. So your lawyers, your auto body shop owners, all of those folks who are parishioners, you get them to comment and hit the share button like once a month. You start to conquer the algorithm using what is natural, which is our geographic and spiritual connections at the parish.
Great. Christian,
should you award them the top fan badge?
100%. But talk to them.
Question over here
about this.
So one of my issues is Joel Meyer from Minnesota, Fergus Falls, Minnesota. One of my issues is that I have been able to take some videos and do some content. Trying to get anyone else to do it has been rough. So like we had our parish festival on Sunday and I had to leave early to be here, and I'm pretty sure no one bothered to shoot any content for that because I wasn't there. So how do you deal with that?
Matt, you know the mic. So in today's chat session, I put a link in there. A way to create a content library is critical, right? Because who's got time? Everybody does. There's content waiting for you to get. You have to invite them to give it to you, though. So think about this. We're in this. This is a meeting room in our parish or a hall. And there's a QR code on the back wall. Why were you here today? When you scan that code, what does that normally do? You've all scanned a QR code, right now? You've all sent an email, right? You've all attached files to an email. So if that QR code automatically created an email on their phone and told them, please attach pictures and video of what you're doing and tell us why you were here. That's already in the body of that email. It's already programmed to go to an email address, maybe not of you individually, but like a generic box that's like media@yourchurch.com. So you now, that email address is accessed by the staff, and when you need to tell a story or pull up what's going on, that's your digital library now. You can just sort by subject line because you can pre-program in Parish Festival weekend or this is why we're meeting. So you can change the subject line in that QR code. And so all they have to do, it already populates it. The email address is there. The subject line is there. It tells them what to type in. And then you say, please attach. If you have any trouble, here's my name and number. Call me. That is so fast to create the digital library that you can draw upon forever and you don't have to be present. So it's in the chat of the session, the link to that, how to create that email, it's in there, so check that out.
Another question back here that I've seen. Yes.
My name's Lee McMahon. I'm from Montgomery, Alabama with the City of St. Jude Parish. I have a two-parter question, so we're not going back and forth. The first one kind of refers to the question before. We do something called homily highlight. I think our pastor is really great at his homily, and we try to do like up to a 3-minute video to put out before this coming Sunday so people will hopefully be engaged and interested in coming to Mass. That's the goal. Part of our problem is we're a small parish of about 120, 150 families, a good bit of whom are, not the generation of technology, so they don't really go follow social media and engage stuff. And the ones that do is kind of few and far between. Some are people I know personally who don't even go to the parish, kind of do it as a favor, and some are a part of the parish. Does it really take as little as one comment per person per month to get it into the algorithm?
To get it into their feed more frequently.
Okay.
So it also involves, I think, training those. Having a conversation, I can get you the text of a homily from a parish in Illinois where a pastor actually preached on the importance of interacting on social media. Mm-hmm. Went really well. But it's giving them the opportunity, right? And so giving them the opportunity, they comment once, they see more, they also then need to be trained in, this is my realm of evangelization, right? This is where I operate as a lay person. So it takes a bit more, but yes, it can be done.
Second part of question, we were saying things about taking pictures of like kids events and vacation Bible school. Do you, or anybody's permission to put their image on social media, especially minors, what issues do you run into? How do you navigate that?
Right here.
Policy or something, yeah.
So, that's good. We actually, one of the things that we have built into our faith formation registration and school registrations is kind of an opt-in, opt-out button as far as like photo usage. Far more people say it's fine to use their images than not, and so we kind of have a short list of the ones we know we can't use. And typically we don't publish names or we just use an initial or something. So we keep privacy like at a premium. But we do, one of the things I think you mentioned, someone before mentioned content too, but one of the things that we've been able to do is use our social media for, like, to build up some followers with our youth and doing, like, scavenger hunts, and having them tag us, and then their friends see that and see the youth group accounts and stuff like that. So it kind of, it works really well, like, if you can kind of master how to do it. We've never had anybody come to us and say, I didn't want my kid's picture on there. And if they do, I would imagine they would be understanding about it because they filled out the form and all that. But we cover our bases with respect to that.
Thank you. Another one. She went first.
Go down there.
Hi. I'm Melissa. I'm from Phoenix. I'm at the Cathedral in Phoenix. And being in Phoenix, our community is 50-50 Spanish speaking and English speaking. So I hope this is a good question. My question is, typically, what I do is I have Facebook is bilingual. I have English and Spanish on Facebook, but Instagram I have only English. What are your thoughts on that? Like, it's basically the same thing, just translated to Spanish. Is that a good idea? What are your thoughts?
Any insights over there?
Yeah, I mean, I just have a brief comment on the social side, which would be that in all the parishes that we have data for running through our system, it is far better to do a graphic with Spanish text and an English translation or vice versa than to double up the number of posts. Because doubling up the number of posts looks to the social media platforms as though you are spamming them, right? And so it's better to just sort of swap. You know, we're going to have English on this image, and we're going to have a Spanish translation in the caption, and then just flip it the next time around. And when we've seen parishes do that, the engagement on those posts doesn't suddenly drop off among one language group or the other. It actually stays relatively flat. So for what it's worth, that's what our numbers show us anyway.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Carrie. I'm from Houston, Texas. I do communications for a parish and a Catholic school. My question is related to the minors and see if I can articulate this, because this is something that I grapple with and I thought about as a parent myself. You know, we, when it comes to in-person interactions with the kids in our parish, you know, our parish as well as the archdiocese, we have very strict trainings. We're very open about our safe environment training, and we want our children to be as safe as possible in person, right? We want to protect them. But then when it comes to social media, you know, all we have an opt-in, opt-out, and if their parents say they're fine with sharing their kids online, then they get shared online. The issue I have is with our Catholic school, you know, you have kids who might then have their entire childhood chronicled on our public Facebook page. And I feel like, you know, again, as the landscape of social media is ever changing, that I feel like this is a conversation the church should be leading as to, is there a sort of digital safe environment policy that parishes and dioceses should implement? Again, even if the parents say yes, is it still really right for the church to publish images of these kids years after year so that when they, you know, reach adulthood, their digital identity is sort of already established for them by us? You know, I don't know what the answer is. I'm just curious, have you heard or engaged in conversations like this? And
anybody?
Yeah. For our kids, all of our Facebook pages are private, so the parents have to opt in. And so we use a lot of heavy kid pictures on the private ones, so they're opting in. If we're going to use it, like, this is the first year we're going to produce a 13-month calendar, and every month is going to be filled with pictures just from our parish. So as much as I love the funeral home in town who's been paying for this for years, I'm done with advertising all that, and we're got enough content to do that. But we've made it private. The problem we're having, and I don't want to make an assumption in this room, but most of us are all on Facebook, and my young adults are like, that's for old people, right? No, I'm right there with y'all, so that's not a problem. But it's the Insta thing, and that's what we challenge on is Instagram and how you get the algorithms and all the other stuff. We do not let any of our kids do Insta. Our youth group, our policy at the Diocese of Columbus, they can do GroupMe texting, but they're not allowed to comment on Insta, and that's from our safe environment office. So.
Where did you say what Diocese of Columbus, Ohio?
With
people on their website, and all their documents are public.
So it is on the website.
Yeah,
their privacy, those
Columbus,
in the Diocese of Columbus. Thank you.
Lindsay Hutchison, St. Ignatius Parish, Mobile. I'm kind of piggybacking on what you just said. My struggle personally in doing parish and school social media is what used to be a great tool when it was just Facebook, you know, 15 years ago and was a time saver that you can really reach people has now come, like, sucked all of my life force out of me because now I'm having to create content for Instagram on two different pages and Facebook on two different pages and, you know, streaming video. And how do you manage to make this, like, not suck the life out of you?
Well, maybe we should talk to the other Lindsay.
Yeah, yeah.
So, one of the things that I have found helpful, and I know there are other tools out there and software and things that will kind of help streamline everything, but if you can find a tool like a Constant Contact or a Loomly or something that where you can do one thing and it will push it out to multiple places for you, that's helpful. You can schedule things in advance. So if you have, you know, say something for Lent, like we do like a photo challenge during Lent. And so I will sit down once a week and schedule out the week. So I'm not tied to the computer every single day. So that's helpful. I mean, yeah.
Content is so different for Instagram than it is for where you can use social media, Facebook and Constant Contact. The Instagram portion, where you have to kind of do it from a phone, not from a computer. Everything's different.
Yeah, repurposing.
And the picture size is different.
Yeah.
Leslie?
Yeah.
So I manage a lot of social media pages, and I think a lot of it is like the mental load of having to constantly think of content. One thing that I do, I have decide once decisions. So I know that like each day I post, like Monday is always going to be, these are just examples, but like a teacher profile. Wednesday is always going to be an event feature that's happening. If you get tired of that after 3 months, then do a whole new set of decide onces to vary your content. But that way you just know what you have to do, and that's half the battle. And you can also do that with templates. So like for every teacher feature, I know my template is going to be X. And that way you can just plug and chug, and it takes some of the mental load off if you're the one having to create all the content all the time. But I find that at least alleviates some of the mental load too, to where then you have more ideas because you're not having to constantly think of ideas, if that helps.
I just want to piggyback on that too. I think I've built or written notes for 4,200 social media posts since 2019, and I'm so tired. But I do the same thing, right? Which is just even when I'm getting content out to the parishes that we serve, it's like, all right, we've got Trivia Tuesday locked. Sunday is for what is the gospel, right? Or what is Father going to be preaching on? I need an engagement question or two each week. And then even among our team, as we're serving parishes around the country, we make decisions on this is the year of, you know, Marian Monday or Theology Thursday or, you know, whatever it might be. You know, obviously the Eucharist, you know, being a key one, or Modern Saints, just kind of making the decision like we're headed down this little route here for a while. And you can say, again, 3 months, 6 months, you know, abandon it if you need to. But the nice thing about it is at the end, you've got a really nice deck of things that you can then recycle and repurpose. You know, you do not reinvent the wheel, but, you know, put a new filter on, change the caption, get it out again in a year or two, you know, when you know it went well. So
thank you, Deacon. We're going to take one more and then ask them for some final comments. Let's go over here.
Ryan Beasley from Cathedral of Christ the King in Atlanta. One note first before my question. I think there's been a lot of great points here, but on Facebook engagement, in my previous line of work, in communications, I'm now director of advancement. I noticed a huge change in the algorithm of Facebook and how people are utilizing it. And posting every day is going to hurt you versus figuring out something that jumps off your page not on any specific time, but you've got to figure out content that jumps off the page and gets people to engage. Because if you do something every single day just to do something, the new algorithm is going to absolutely drown your account. And I had 30,000 followers on my Facebook account, and I was getting 5, 10, 100 likes maybe of engagement. So it just wasn't working. So I had to restructure my Facebook approach. And then other conversations that were had about Facebook, the next generation's not using it. So my question is, TikTok, what is your advice? Because that's where the youth is, but it's very controversial in a lot of different ways. I'm not a fan of TikTok. I don't believe in it, but I also know that if you don't approach certain generations on platforms that they're in, you're going to get left behind. So my question to you is, how do you navigate that, especially within a church environment?
Who wants to tackle that one? Anybody?
I will try. I mean, there's so many different ones. Even like LinkedIn, like that's a social media, right? You know, with a lot of young professionals on there. TikTok, what's the other one? Snapchat. I struggle with this even with my own kids. I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old daughter, and it's like, I just went through this thing with my daughter where I have parental controls on her phone. I do not allow her to have certain things. Her phone shuts off after she's on it for so long. She was at a friend's house and they like made an account on the friend's computer, you know, so they find a way around it and are having access to these things for sure. And we try to control it the best we can for their betterment. But one of our, not our parish, but another parish nearby, during COVID, one of their most, like, their youth ministry, their youth ministry grew during COVID, which was phenomenal to me. And a lot of it was because they had a youth minister who was like making these really cool TikTok videos, like for the kids. And I was like, I don't know how you did that. And she was great at it. And she now does campus ministry somewhere else. But I think it's possible to use those in the right way. I mean, and it's good content versus whatever else they're seeing on it. So if they're on there anyway, it gives them something positive and good to look at while they're on there. And if they're not on there, they're not on there. But
our time's drawing to a nigh, so let me just ask for some final thoughts here real quick. Anything?
Yeah.
I would say that your goal on digital communications isn't to go viral. It's to use it as a tool and use it how you need it. So just keep that in mind. Have a purpose for your channels and just work towards that purpose. And don't worry about the huge following and going viral.
Thank you.
I would say for me, it is definitely to just remember to be on the channels that help you reach your people at the end of the day. So to this point about going viral, right? 82% of Americans over the age of 12 are still logging into Facebook monthly. We're still seeing that, the generational trickle-down effect on social media, that while if you look at the average age of your followers, it may be like 50-plus, who you're reaching almost always trickles down to their children and grandchildren. So instead of that, you know, it's not the difficult conversation about why don't you go to church anymore at Thanksgiving, right? It's about training people who are your most committed followers and parishioners how they can gently work these messages into the lives of people that need to be reached.
Thank you, Deacon. Real quick, Matt.
You bet. I'll go and yell. There. So you're going to make mistakes. Give yourself some grace. Try things that are new. Change is scary, but have a framework you can work within, and just try 1% better every week. Just try something new until you can figure out the messaging that works on the platform you need to, the audience, and the story you're trying to tell. I think that's the biggest thing, is this mental burnout that's happening. It can be stressful if you don't give yourself a little grace and have a plan. The framework is key. Give yourself an idea, first week, second week, third week of the month. Get that out there. Do it. you'll do much, much better just trying a little thing over time than trying to swing a hit home run.
Thanks, Matt.
Yep.
I would say my best piece of advice would be that you don't have to do everything yourself. There are companies out there, there are people within your parishes or schools that maybe are better versed at one type of digital media versus another. And don't be afraid to say, hey, I don't know how to use this well. Can you do it? Or find a young adult that's really good with a camera and enlist them to help create some content. So it's another type of stewardship for people who want to be involved that maybe they're not people. Maybe they don't, you know, I mean, sometimes people who are real techie aren't great with interacting with other people sometimes. And so maybe they're great at helping you behind the scenes with doing stuff at a computer. So don't be afraid to ask.
And these are four great stewards of our church and ICSC, Leslie, Deacon John, and Matt, and Lindsay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Fill out the survey, and let's go down to the exhibit hall so you can win some prizes.